Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 3 months ago, in November's midterm elections, Democrat Cindy Axne unseated incumbent Republican David Young. She now represents Iowa's 3rd District in Washington. Iowa's 3rd District covers roughly the southwest corner of the state, including the cities of Des Moines, West Des Moines, Council Bluffs. Axne, along with Abby Finkenauer, freshman representative for Iowa's 1st District, are the first women Iowa has sent to the U.S. House of Representatives in history. Cindy Axne joins us for this first half hour. Congresswoman Axne, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here. I love your show.
Thank you so much. I want to mention that you serve on the House Ag Committee. Also, you've been assigned to the House Financial Services Committee. We'll ask you a couple things about that a little bit later. But, of course, this is the evening tonight for the State of the Union, the president delivering his second State of the Union address tonight to Congress, his first under divided government. I want to mention to our listeners, too, that if you have a question for Congresswoman Axne, make sure you call this half hour, 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Back to the State of the Union. Congresswoman Axne, several Democrats, your fellow Democrats, are planning to send their pointed messages to President Trump with their choice of guests for this State of the Union address, one bringing a climate scientist, another a refugee, I believe. Are you bringing guests that will send a message?
Well, I'm actually very honored to bring Peggy Huppert, who's the executive director of the National Alliance for Mental Illness in Iowa. We know that that's an issue that our district and the state and the country is facing, is addressing mental health issues and making sure we've got the services and addressing root causes of it as well. So I'm really thrilled to have her. She's my State of the Union guest, and I sure hope to hear the president talk about the importance of working in a bipartisan manner to improve access to health care for all Iowans. And that absolutely includes mental health services and, of course, lowering the cost of prescription drugs. So I'm thrilled to have Peggy here. And actually, she was on my plane right out, so it was good to see her this morning.
Very good. Peggy's been on this program as well many, many times. Many women will be wearing white, women Democrats in the House, the color of women's suffrage, the suffrage movement. Also, I guess to spotlight issues like reproductive rights and equal pay. Will we see you in white?
Absolutely. I had to make a trip to the mall this past weekend to get a suit. As a mom of two boys, white was not in my wardrobe for a long time. So I actually had a deficit there and had to run to the mall, but I've got a white suit to make sure that I'm there standing with my brothers and sisters, pushing for equality for everybody, and just really sending a united message that we want to work with each other, we want to build strong communities, and we want to support equal opportunity for everyone. So I think it's a great idea, and I'm happy to be joining the group with that.
President Trump delivering his second State of the Union address, the first under divided government. I'm reading a report that he's expected to deliver a bipartisan message themed around choosing greatness. I'm curious, this is your first State of the Union address. What are your thoughts about when you'll clap, when you might stand up? Does the party or do party leaders give you any guidance or instruction there?
Well, I will independently do that myself. I think that if I hear something that I think is beneficial for our district, I'll certainly support that. Other than that, I probably will just remain seated. But no, the party doesn't give guidance on whether to applaud or reply or that type of thing. I'm looking at this as an opportunity to see if the president will be talking about those really important issues that are bipartisan, infrastructure that we all know we need in Iowa, roads, bridges, water and sewer systems, broadband, cellular, as well as I hope he certainly talks about health care. We know that in the past he has brought up lowering the cost of prescription drugs. I'd be excited to hear him talk about that because that's the first thing I think that we could do as a House and move on to the Senate is an opportunity to make sure that we address the cost of prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm. You are on the Ag Committee. You mentioned broadband there. A question from one of our listeners, Andrew. What is your plan to spur economic development in West Central and Southwest Iowa? It needs to be more than broadband development, writes Andrew.
Well, Andrew, I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you so much for asking that question. And as a matter of fact, I just finished up an 8-county tour of our healthcare systems in our rural communities. So that's one area that I'm going to be addressing, making sure that we have affordable quality healthcare for people in our rural areas. And I want to make sure that we continue to support expanded Medicaid subsidies, which flow to our regional hospitals, like the one I visited in Atlantic. Without these expanded subsidies, those types of hospitals could stand to lose a lot of revenue. That could force them to lay people off and, of course, shut their doors. And so one of the things that I can do for our rural communities is make sure that we address health care. I also want to ensure that we continue to promote public education and do what I can here at a federal level to make sure all of our resources go towards our public schools and bring in more trades programs and apprenticeship programs into all of our high schools and bring post-secondary opportunity for that across the district. So that's a few of the things that I would like to do. Definitely infrastructure, including housing, certainly healthcare, public schools, and bringing jobs to our communities. I actually just co-sponsored the GREAT Act, which is the Grant Reporting Efficiency and Agreements Transparency Act, and that will streamline and modernize the federal grant process to improve efficiency and root out waste. And what it will allow us to do is make sure that our local communities are tapping into those billions of dollars that, quite honestly, we're leaving on the table. And so I actually was asked by Virginia Fox, a Republican from North Carolina, who came over to me in the House because she heard I was interested in supporting our local communities in our rural areas. And so she sought me out to see if I'd be interested in co-sponsoring that bill with her. So I'm looking at every opportunity I can to make sure that we benefit our rural communities with jobs, with good health care, certainly with our schools and infrastructure as well.
Mm-hmm. From afar, we often get the vision of Washington as hyper-partisan, very divided. You just mentioned a case of reaching across the aisle, Virginia Fox there. How much of that happens? Is that happening a lot? Are you surprised that that is happening to the extent that it is?
Well, I'm just really happy to see that there are definitely people here on both sides of the aisle that want to work together. I talked about broadband earlier. The new Republican representative out of South Dakota, Dusty, is somebody who's worked on rural broadband in his business life, and he's also worked on rural broadband in Iowa. So we're talking, and he's also on the Agriculture Committee. So we are absolutely trying to work together, and I'm pleased to see that there's a bipartisan support for the work that I'm doing. I think there's bipartisan support for a lot of the bills that are out there. So it's exciting. And to your point, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think so often what we see is government not working. But when I'm in the House, there's definitely opportunity, and there are people reaching out to work on bills to help this country in a bipartisan fashion. And it's exciting.
If you just joined us for this half hour, my guest is Congresswoman Cindy Axne of Iowa's 3rd District. She serves on the House Ag Committee, also the House Financial Services Committee. Several of our listeners want to know your thoughts on what is being called the New Green Deal, referring to any of the several proposed economic stimulus programs that aim to address both economic inequality and climate change.
Well, listen, I spent a decade in state government, and one of my roles there was directing the state's energy and environment plan and helping to make Iowa number two in wind energy production, of course, looking at clean biofuels. This is very important to me. I compost throughout 2-degree weather in Iowa, so that's not easy to do. And so making sure that we address our environmental issues and work against climate change is a priority for me. I have to look at the details of the New Green Deal. I want to make sure that it works well for our district and that when we look at opportunities to possibly change the way we produce energy or fuels in this country, that we're making sure that we're looking at the industry. So, for instance, in Iowa, our renewable fuels industry, and making sure that that type of legislation works for that. So I need to take a look at it. There's a lot of it that isn't fully defined at this point. It's very top level, umbrella level, so to speak. And so the devil's in the details on those things, and that's where I'll be making sure that Iowa's voices are heard.
Here's a how do you pay for it question from Kyle for you, Congresswoman, in Des Moines. Kyle asking, how high are you willing to raise Iowan's taxes in order to pay for all the new and or bolstered programs and policies you and fellow Democrats ran on in 2018?
Well, I'll tell you what. I didn't run on increasing taxes. That's not something that I was talking about. What I did run on was making sure that we brought legislation to the floor that enhanced our lives here in our district. So that's around health care. That's around infrastructure. That's certainly, you know, around our education system and environmental issues. But it also means protecting our agriculture community to make sure that we thrive. And I'm thrilled to also be on the, you know, Financial Services Committee, because we have a large finance and insurance business industry in our district. And so that's where I'm really focused on. And, you know, we'll look at seeing what we need to do to make sure that we've got the funding for it. I've always said it's about putting your values, your resources where your values are. And as a small business owner, I absolutely know how to balance the books. When I was at the state of Iowa, I helped, you know, direct initiatives to root out waste and fraud and save millions of dollars for taxpayers. So I will always be on the side of making sure that we use taxpayer dollars wisely, that we hold government accountable to being efficient, and we put our resources in the places that are most important for the people in our district.
You mentioned you serve on the House Financial Services Committee. This committee has jurisdiction over some key issues, oversight of federal monetary policy, banking and financial institutions, housing and community development, insurance, trade as well. Those who don't know you would probably need to know that you have a background in business, a graduate degree in business, as a matter of fact. Matthew on our Facebook wants to ask you, what is your view on this 70% marginal tax rate and the greater than 1% tax, the tax on the top 1%, the very top bracket? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I guess we connect her name with that.
Well, you know, I have to take a look at what that impact would look like, but what I can tell you is that we need to make sure that the wealthy in this country are paying their fair share. And it's one of the issues I had with this current tax bill, and I talked about that when I was running for this race. It's not right when working-class families, when most small businesses aren't able to write off and have tax advantages, but large corporations and the wealthiest among us have that. So they need to pay their fair share. I will look to see what that means and how we can shore that up to make sure that we've got the resources in the country. But it's unacceptable the levels that the wealthy are paying at this rate because of this at this right now as a result of this recent tax bill. So I absolutely want to make sure that we've got a fair and level playing field, and that corporations and wealthy are held to accountable to making sure that they pay fairly into a system that they're receiving a lot of benefits from.
Specifically to Matthew's question, though, would you possibly, could you be in favor of a 70% marginal tax rate on income above $10 million, those making more than $10 million a year? Could you see a 70% marginal tax rate?
Yeah, that's been something that's been done in the past, and I absolutely think we should look at it.
Okay. Join our conversation. We have a few more minutes left with Congresswoman Cindy Axne of Iowa's 3rd District, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. We need to talk about the we're in the middle of the negotiations for avoiding another partial government shutdown, Congresswoman Axne. 10 days, I think, until the deadline to reach an agreement or risk another partial government shutdown. Your leader, Speaker Pelosi, has refused to negotiate over the president's demand for a border wall. And what are you and other House Democrats doing to end this stalemate?
Well, I would tell you that during the shutdown phase, we passed 11 bills to reopen government, and those were appropriations bills that were approved by the Republican-held Senate and the Republican-held House. And so I think we have come to the table certainly with offers that we thought the administration would see as fair. I'll tell you what, the amount of pain that that 35-day shutdown caused our economy, our communities, our families, it was absolutely unacceptable. So we need to avoid this at all costs. It's absolutely unconscionable to shut down the government again. And so that's why myself, along with 20 other freshmen, introduced the legislation, Shutdown to End All Shutdowns Act, to ensure that government never shuts down again. And I strongly urge my Republican and Democratic colleagues to reach a compromise deal. So we're really also relying on the Senate to do its job. They need to step up to the plate. The House, over the past month plus, has showed time and time again that we're willing to talk about border security, that we're willing to talk about issues, but we absolutely need to get government open. And so, I'm there and hoping that there will be people who are interested in making sure that we never have a shutdown again. There's other people who have put forth bills in the Senate as well as the House related to never having a shutdown, both on the Democratic and Republican sides. And I think, we should be able to find an opportunity here to compromise and then to make sure that we never have a shutdown in the future.
So much we could talk about. We have about 5 minutes left, Congresswoman Axne. Let's go to a question from Danielle in Woodward. She called in to say that and left a message that she just got back from class and she and her college students are depressed, thinking that there will be no Social Security. What are you going to do about that? She wants to know.
Oh, well, I am going to protect Social Security every step I get. It's not just our seniors, of course. It's many people in this country who rely on Social Security for one reason or another, but certainly for our seniors to be able to retire with dignity. I volunteered with the elderly for many years when I lived in Chicago because I know how important it is for our seniors to live a life of dignity. And I saw firsthand how difficult it is for people who have nothing other than Social Security. It is so important that we protect that and ensure that we've got the funds to make that happen. So we should never be looking at Social Security as a place to cut or to take funding from. Those are hard-earned benefits that people deserve. They've worked for those, and I will protect those every step I get.
Mm-hmm. Representative Maxine Waters, your Democratic colleague, is the chair of the Financial Services Committee on which you serve. She has vowed to counteract the Trump administration's 2018 rollback of the Dodd-Frank legislation. This is a huge piece of legislation, financial reform that passed in the Obama administration in 2010. This was a response to that financial crisis of 2008. This White House has called it disastrous and overbroad. What is your critique, quickly, of Dodd-Frank?
Well, I absolutely think we need to have particular regulations in place that support our economy and protect our consumers. I'm on the subcommittee for investor protection, and I want to make sure that the dollars that this country is producing and saving and trying to put away and the banks that they're using are all working in the right direction to help boost our economy for every single person, whether you're from a low-income family or wherever you sit. It's important that we protect that. So I'm excited to be representing Iowa, and as a small business owner representing an urban and rural district, I'm thankful for this opportunity because I think I can bring a unique perspective regarding the difficulties and challenges that different communities face in obtaining capital and making sure that they've got opportunity. And so I'm really looking forward to being able to be a voice for Iowans in this. And I think there's ample opportunity to make sure that we protect consumers and that we also grow our economy.
Time enough to squeeze in at least one more question. Let's go to our phones. Vanessa in the 3rd District, Iowa, calling from Des Moines. Hi, Vanessa. I'll ask you to be concise. We're sure glad you're joining us.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Representative, do you support comprehensive immigration reform that includes a pathway to citizenship for all 11 million undocumented immigrants?
Well, thank you, Vanessa, for that question. Nice to talk with you. Absolutely, I support immigration reform. We need to make sure that we protect our country and keep it safe, but we also need to make sure that we are that we stand on the shoulders of the founders of this country. This is a country that welcomes people, and part of the beauty of this country is the fabric of different cultures and people that live here that have created great economic opportunity and helped our society move forward in a better direction. So I want to see us have immigration reform. I want a quick pathway for our dreamers. We need to pass DACA, but we also need to ensure that there's a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants without a criminal or violent background. We've got a lot to do when it comes to immigration reform, but I absolutely believe that we can make it happen.
Couple minutes left, Representative Axney. You've been in Congress now for just a few, well, a month, I guess. Give us a few words to describe what it's been like this first month.
Frenetic, exciting, sometimes chaotic. Very much a learning experience. I joked around because last week I had two meetings at the same time and had to get to a finance committee meeting as well for a rules markup. We took a meeting in between that because that's what you often do is in these long four-hour meetings is you can take meetings in between that. And then I found out that I had to be back there immediately. Well, it's a good thing I work out because I sprinted three blocks down Independence Avenue and ran in the door of the committee room and yelled my vote. So it's quite an experience. You know, we literally try and meet with as many constituents as we can that are coming out here, certainly with other groups that are impacting the lives of Iowans, and then do our committee work. And I'm on four subcommittees. I'm very grateful to be on both financial services and agriculture. I got a waiver to be on agriculture. They gave me that because I'm on an exclusive committee, and usually you can't be on a secondary one, but they know how important agriculture is for Iowa. So it's just incredibly exciting. Of course, I meet great people on both sides of the aisle, and it's very inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, as a representative from the First in the Nation caucus state of Iowa, how much attention are you getting from the 2020 Democratic hopefuls?
Well, let's just say I get a lot of phone calls. We certainly had several going into the general election as well, as I'm sure you're fully aware of the people who came over the summer before they announced. But I'm grateful that they're giving me a call, and I hope that Iowans get out to see as many presidential hopefuls as they can to educate themselves on who they think would be best for the country. And so glad to see they're all coming, and I'm hoping, you know, that works well for Iowa. We deserve to be first in the nation, and mm-hmm. So get out and see people so you know what choice you have.
Will you eventually endorse a Democratic candidate for president?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be focused on doing this job and making sure that I do the best I can by the people in our third district. I haven't thought about that yet. There's plenty of time down the road.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative, U.S. Representative Cindy Axney. Thank you for joining us from Washington. We'll be looking for you in the audience in the House of Representatives tonight during the President's State of the Union.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Ben.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about mental health courts. In particular, we'll hear from two women involved in a pilot program for a mental health court in Story County. This is where mental health courts are linking offenders who would normally be put into prison to long-term community-based treatment. Mental health courts. We'll talk about it when we come back. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River.